Hello, world. This is Nick Jarman, and you are listening to the Debt Collection Forum podcast. On this episode, we are going to talk about culture and just how important it is to your organization. While there are many things that have to work in an organization's favor to ensure success, there is one thing that will determine whether an organization succeeds or fails, and that is their culture. There is no two ways about it. Either you have a good culture and you have an opportunity to succeed, or you don't and you're destined to fail. While in the credit and collection industry, you need a lot more than just a good culture, one thing is for certain, not having one will not give you a great opportunity for that long-term, sustainable success that everyone desires. And there are certain industries that are difficult, and the ARM industry is certainly no different. You see, what we do is already inherently negative. We are trying to get in contact with someone who doesn't know who we are, about a debt they can't afford, at a time that is most likely not convenient, and so on and so forth. But before their account is even placed in our department or office, the proverbial deck is stacked against us. And as I tell anyone that I've interviewed over my 20-year career, when you take a job in this industry, there's a balancing act. One between making sure that you're paid enough versus making sure that you have the culture that fits for where you want to be. Because we can pay you a lot of money and then not provide you with the culture, and it's not going to be a long-lasting proposition for yourself because you're not going to enjoy what you do. And the vice versa holds true. You can end up having the culture that you desired but not able to pay your bills, and it won't put you in a position that will have long-lasting success. So there's a balancing act, but it all starts and ends with culture. So in this episode of the Debt Collection Forum podcast, I want to dive into culture and talk about how critical important it is for the organization. Because it is, in my opinion, the singular most important aspect of success for not just credit and collections, but any organization if one is going to look to succeed. And when you're working together, that's what makes the world go round. Even the most brilliant geniuses among us need a helping hand now and then to get their ideas off the ground. But pulling together to achieve a common aim isn't as easy as it looks on paper. And when it's in the office, if there's a dysfunctional group dynamic, it can quickly sour the atmosphere and lead to all manner of infighting. So what exactly makes a team more than the sum of its parts? In this episode, we're going to take a look at why a group of children can easily beat lawyers in a simple teamwork exercise, what makes us feel safe and why that matters, and why stories are so effective when it comes to establishing a shared sense of purpose. Weak group cultures are the result of focusing on skills and neglecting interactions. When it comes to work colleagues, big or small, every group has its own distinctive culture. So, what exactly is a group culture? In essence, it's the relationship between people working together to achieve a common aim. Not all group cultures are alike, though. Some work well, while others are dysfunctional. You can spot a poor group culture a mile off. If you've ever worked in an office with a defective group culture, you'll know the atmosphere is so thick and tense that you can cut it with a knife. That's often the result of group members focusing on the wrong thing. Rather than paying attention to the quality of the interactions, they struggle to determine their position within the group and spend time worrying about their own status. As soon as you start doing that, you're no longer focused on the work at hand. Everything becomes a question of whose ideas can be criticized and which rules are open for debate. That, my friend, is a recipe for disaster. There was a study done where a group of kindergartners, business school students, and lawyers were asked to take part in a simple competition. The aim was the exercise was to build the tallest possible structure using uncooked spaghetti, tape, a yard of string, and a single marshmallow. If you were the betting type, you'd surely put your money on the students or the lawyers, right? After all, they were the ones with the most experience, expertise, and general knowledge. As it turned out, it was the kindergartners who usually won. So how did they prevail over their older and presumably wiser competitors? The answer lied in group dynamics. The business school students, for example, always began by analyzing the task at hand. discussing the right strategy to follow and quietly establishing a hierarchy. The kindergartners, however, pursued a radically different approach. Rather than trying to figure out who was responsible for what, they simply got on with the task at hand. Hardly wasting a word, they huddled together and started experimenting. If one attempt failed, they tried something else. They ended up winning the competition because they were focused on interaction. They were cooperating to achieve a shared goal rather than competing amongst themselves. So how can you make your group more like that of the kindergartners? You can start with cultivating a sense of safety and belonging in the foundation of a strong group culture. Imagine you've been assigned a complex task demanding every ounce of your skill and expertise. You're given two choices as to where to work, your own home or a room full of complete strangers. In which setting would you be more likely to succeed? With the current global pandemic going on, more employees are being forced to answer that question much easily now. But for the purpose of this episode, we'll dive into this question. Most of us wouldn't hesitate, of course. It'd be much easier in your own home than with a bunch of complete strangers, because it's a safe environment. And the same principle applies to groups. A group performs at a much higher level if each of its members feels safe. It's worth thinking about the concept of safety a little. What is it, and why is it so important? Safety is ultimately about a sense of familiarity and connections. When we feel safe, we know that there aren't unseen dangers lurking around every corner. A strong group culture nurtures that sense, and that, in turn, boosts individual performance. Take the results of this study. A researcher instructed a man to assume a different role amongst various groups that had been tasked with developing a marketing plan for a company. Taking on the guise of an obnoxious idler, the researcher would slack off and obstruct the progress of the group's work. In most cases, his behavior was contagious. Those around him mirrored his attitude and started behaving the same way. But in another group, one proved immune to this behavior. This was because in this group, there was another researcher, another member placed to consistently counter the other one's bad attitude with warmth and positivity. By making those around him feel safe and comfortable, he helped the group perform well despite the presence of that bad apple. This finding underscores an important point. We perform best when we receive belonging cues that bolster our perceptions of safety. Further, proof of this can be found in another study of a group performance done by a bunch of researchers at MIT. They had two groups of students play the roles of bosses and employees engaged in negotiations about salary, health benefits, and vacations. They then used a so-called sociometer, a data-collecting sensor program to pick up the belonging cues like eye contact, mimicry, and physical proximity to analyze the negotiations. Paying attention to these cues allowed them to gauge the sense of safety of the participants. You see, our brains are wired to be constantly alert and on the lookout for signs of danger. So these behavioral traits are a good indication of when we feel safe in our environment. They discovered that they could predict the outcome of the bargaining sessions just by looking at the first 5 minutes of the data they had gathered. It was the interaction that determined the outcome, not what was being said. So we know that the success of groups depends on making everyone feel safe. But creating a safe-like environment isn't something that can be picked up from a book. Like honing your skills on the football field, it's something that takes time and practice. With that said, there are a few tips that might be able to help us along the way. If you want to create a safe working environment, it's essential that you let the people around you know that you're listening to what they have to say. Take an insight developed by a world-renowned consultant who visits companies and organizations all across the globe that have proven and defined successful group cultures. He does this to see what makes them tick, what makes them so successful, and ultimately, he invariably sees the same things. People show that they're listening to each other. They tilt their head towards the speaker, raise their eyebrows, and hardly blink. They also use linguistic markers that show that they're paying attention, interjecting words of affirmation like, right, yes, and so on. It's a simple and effective way of making people feel safe. Try it out sometime. Interjecting occasionally to show you're following someone's train of thought isn't the same as interrupting them, however, because great listeners know when to hold back. And that's important because interruptions by themselves disturb the smooth flow of interactions that foster that sense of belonging and safety that we all long for. One thing he also noticed was that when he was looking at these groups' dynamics, he noticed that salespeople specifically who interrupted their potential buyers weren't nearly as successful as those who spent more time listening. Another top tip is to let people see your weaknesses. Demonstrating that you're aware of your own imperfections and admitting that you also make mistakes early on in an interaction lays a foundation for that feeling of safety. That's not an easy thing to admit to, of course. Usually, we're determined to dazzle others with our competence, but that just isn't the best way to put others at ease. A much more effective strategy is to make others feel like you need their help. And this can be as simple as using a phrase that invites input like, I might be wrong. Of course. Did I miss something? Or asking someone what they think. So that's the key, the skill you'll need in order to create a safe environment. Let's take a moment to think about how you interact with others. Have you ever exaggerated your own know-how and gone to great lengths to demonstrate your own competence? If that sounds familiar, you might want to stop. While it might sound counterintuitive, sharing your vulnerabilities is essential to boosting group performance. But how does that exactly work? Mirroring is a common dynamic in groups. We pick up on the way those around us behave and take up the same patterns. Admitting weaknesses and mistakes signals to other group members that they can do the same. And that's a great way to build trust. A professor at Harvard who studies organizational behavior calls this the vulnerability loop. This essentially refers to a feedback loop between the members of that group, which generates the sense of closeness essential to a cohesive group performance. The close connection between admitting vulnerabilities and cooperation continues to be confirmed by numerous studies all across the world. Take an experiment conducted by psychologists. The participants in this study were asked to complete a time-consuming and laborious task on a computer. As they neared completion of the task, the computers would suddenly and seemingly spontaneously crash. The psychologist had planted an assistant amongst the group. When the computers crashed, he would come to the rescue of the participants and restore the work they had lost. Later, while playing a specially designed game, the participants showed a much greater willingness to cooperate both with their rescuer and the other computer users, despite the fact that they had remained complete strangers to one another. This was because they had experienced a moment of vulnerability and had then been rescued, a series of events that had resulted in a sense of trust and safety. So how do you go about building a strong team? A good place to start is to communicate your expectation that people should cooperate with each other. To say that you want to cooperate with someone is another way of saying that you need their help, which is also a way of sharing your vulnerabilities. When you let people know that you're reliant on their help, it lets them know that they can also feel comfortable admitting their own shortcomings. It creates an environment in which no one is expected to go it alone and manage everything by themselves. It's a nifty little trick that's been put into action by innovation consultants, where at the start of assignments, they look at what's needed and give explicit information about cooperation. And the trickier they tell the colleagues the problem is, the greater the team gets to where the need is to work together to find deeper solutions. It's that philosophy of cooperation that's at the heart of the success. And that might leave you wondering about the role of leaders in all of this. The answer can be found in the word itself. Their task is to lead. And that means being the first to walk the plank and admit their vulnerabilities. You can see why this is important by imagining an office meeting with both your colleagues and your managers. It's unfortunately common for the former to fear the latter, as they've worried about keeping up appearances and demonstrating their knowledge and competency. But it's normal to make mistakes. We all make them. They're a part of the learning process, have been, always will be, which is why leaders need to be role models and lead the way. By admitting their vulnerabilities and imperfections, they help foster an open environment in which everyone can admit to mistakes and work with others on solutions. Take this example regarding an individual that had just been given a huge presentation. The morning after he had given the presentation, he held a staff meeting watching footage of his presentation. After they'd seen the video, he asked for the candid feedback and asked for them to share their own experiences of what they witnessed. They told him how nervous he'd looked, how his legs had been shaking, and how badly he messed up even at rehearsal. Finally, once it was over, he thanked those colleagues and told them that he would not have been able to have given that next talk that he was going to give without their candid feedback. This is a great way to lead by example. By sharing vulnerabilities in such a candid manner, he created a working environment in which every employee felt free to do the same. And if you've ever played or even just watched a team sport, you'll know that teams that regularly put in great performances share a strong vision of how to play together and what they want to achieve. That's because a common sense of purpose is the key to group performance. Let's pause for a second to define that. A sense of purpose is simply a set of beliefs and values underpinning people's actions. It's what shapes a group's identity and tells others what it stands for. Cooperative cultures can't do without it. And a shared sense of purpose provides group members with a common stock of ideas while aligning behavior. Because it's a shared sense of purpose, which is so important to group cohesion and performance, that companies often try to create high performance and high purpose environments. This is a way of guiding action around a repeatable purpose that's always at the front and center of group members' minds. High purpose environments are packed with signals connecting members of a group to a shared future goal. Think of it like a bridge spanning the present and the future. Before setting foot on the bridge, the members of the group are confronted with a sign saying, "This is where we are today, and this is where we'll be tomorrow." Psychologists continue to demonstrate in several studies that communication, common goals, like making sure that customer experiences is our first priority, helps unite the members and employees of groups while making their shared aim accessible. It's the bridges that are like stories with a distinctive narrative arc. This is an important factor because our minds are highly receptive to storytelling and data that scans consistently to prove it. When we're confronted with a simple fact, it's our brains that are fairly inactive. At most, we grasp the meaning of the fact, but stories, on the other hand, actively engage our minds. We can't help but start thinking about cause and effect as well as greater meaning of the story. That makes storytelling a powerful spur to action. It motivates us to pursue a common goal, like, for example, putting customer experience first. And if you want to build a sense of purpose, repeat it again and again, and don't shy away from corny slogans. Because establishing a sense of purpose isn't something you can do overnight. It's not as simple as carving a mission statement into a block of granite and putting it outside of company headquarters. So take your time, as it's a process that involves failures and learning from past mistakes. Even so, there are a few tips that can help you along the way. Repetition, as we just stated, is an integral part to a shared sense of purpose. And repetition really does mean repetition. You should be blue in the face once you're done extolling your company's core convictions. Because we know what we mean when we say something. We often assume that our priorities have been communicated to others, but they're often about as clear as mud. That's why you shouldn't be shy about repeating yourself. If you want something to be clear, say it 10 times over. And to get a sense of why this is so important, take a survey by Inc. magazine that asks managers how many people in their teams knew what the company's top priorities were. The average among the managers' answers was 64%. When the magazine asked the employees, however, it soon became clear that the actual number was only 2%. A clever way of boosting awareness is by over-communicating your company's sense of purpose in regular meetings. This is especially effective when you invite people to actively engage and encourage them to reflect on even challenging the company's goals. That's something that most successful companies do to great effect. They hold frequent meetings and do it with senior managers designed to encourage robust discussion of the company's credo. Conveniently enough, it's also carved into that granite just outside the building where the meetings take place. And it's their core aims that haven't changed much as a result, but it does encourage active engagement with the priorities. And another effective way of establishing a common sense of purpose is to use short and snappy catchphrases. These can be corny, of course, but that doesn't mean that they're not effective. Think, for example, of an online shoe and clothing company, Zappos' memorable slogan, "Create fun and a little weirdness," or consulting firm Ideo's, "Talk less, do more." Think about Bill Gates, a desk on every computer. Cheesy or not, they're useful reminders of what a company stands for, so embrace them. The key message to this episode: group dynamics determine control and outcomes. When a team focuses its attentions on the wrong thing, it loses sight of what's most important to its performance. The interactions of its members, but a healthy and productive group dynamic is always possible. The best way of achieving it is to create a safe environment in which everyone can share their vulnerabilities. Because when you add a common sense of purpose into the mix, you've got the perfect recipe for success. And the best piece of advice that I can give you: learn how to be an active listener. I appreciate you taking time to listen to this episode of the Debt Collection Forum podcast. Be sure to check us out online at thedcforum.com, social media at the DC Forum. Until next time, be sure to engage, inspire, and empower.